get started again. Thank you. I think what we wanted to do for the next hour and something.
We'll see how long it goes. Let's give ourselves an hour. Kind of go around and hear report backs from each of the four teams on what you discussed. Before we jump into that, wanted to just kind of talk through again the expectation around these deliverables and how we've been thinking about the effort that might be involved in these things. The stage that we're at in this group, we want the aspirations to be appropriately high and not be held back at this moment by concerns about, oh, I don't have time to take that on, so I'm not really going to suggest it. You're getting pulled into too much. That's right. So I think we want to, we really want to do the kind of fullest articulation of some of these big ideas, and then step back later and figure out what sort of longer term agenda makes sense, where we might want to commission other people to do things or bring in other resources. You want to add anything?
No, I think that's right. Yeah. Ditto.
Well, so can we hear from the Access, Equity, and Inclusion team?
Yeah, sure. You want to start up?
Cool.
We are the Access, Equity, Inclusion group, and I think we started in thinking about this group and something that, like, I started off with, which is a lot of times when we encounter, particularly in education, kind of inequities or racial bias, those things are structural, that we may have a group here, but this group is not very diverse, and it reflects those kind of structural issues. You know, it's the easiest thing to do when you convene a group together, you convene folks, and that you have to actually be really intentional and purposeful about trying to address racial inequity, socioeconomic inequity. So we started thinking about that, and we started thinking about what we see, because I don't think we defined this as a group, maybe I missed it in the first meeting, but what we think, what's the kind of big goal that we have for working in the space of open? We articulated it to some degree. I'm going to read that, which we may need to get your agreement on. Maybe you all don't agree on this. But generally, we agree that we're not here necessarily advocating for open as an end in itself. But we want to achieve an equitable and just society. We want to reduce barriers of cost to students, cultural bias in course material, and provide support for students with disabilities. In order to remove those barriers, we, this group, as well as the larger OER committee, needs to connect with these partner organizations. We need to partner with them, and we need to include them both in identifying what are the core problems. Have we identified it? Do we understand the issues for all students as completely as we can? And then how can they help us develop solutions to these problems? So certainly our group of three was not a representative group to come up with these kind of solutions. So we started thinking, and James brought this up, about how he, in his work in California, he often advocates for OER outside the usual kind of groups of people. So the campus hunger, you know, the group that addresses campus hunger was one organization. Another organization was kind of centered on advocacy for African American students. There are numerous groups like that that are kind of tangentially maybe related to kind of our work, or we may come across these groups. A good example is a couple of years ago, the NAACP adopted OER as part of their kind of mission statement, which was really, really interesting, because that's not a group that we usually kind of cross paths with. So we're thinking about is a way to address broadly kind of the OER community and the voices in that community and the people just at an awareness level of how openness and sharing may have a really relevant, direct support of their goals. It's a way that this group can do something about that. We still need to work on this, kind of coming up with a full outline of what a deliverable might be. But we're thinking of it as both an outreach campaign and maybe some kind of convening, right? So we've identified kind of socioeconomic groups, ones like Wheel College, groups that are really gotta kind of advocate around kind of racial or ethnic populations of students. So we work a lot with tribal colleges, which IHP usually supports them. The Community College Equity Assessment Lab is one that James brought up, Excellencia. Maybe so. Our homework, really, for our group is to kind of start to identify advocacy groups around gender identity and support, around ADA disability issues, around racial, socioeconomic, those kind of buckets, and figure out a plan for connecting in a way that's respectful, like not just like, hey, we've got a solution for you called OER, but kind of figure out, begin a dialogue as best we can with these groups to try to advocate more broadly and make these kind of connections to these other groups that have a real direct impact on kind of equitable outcomes for students, and to broaden kind of the impact of OER and the voices within that come up with these solutions to these groups. And as we were talking about, I think, has this been done? Maybe it has. Maybe you know of examples of this, but I don't know if this has been done on a comprehensive level of really trying to expand who we reach and the kind of voices that kind of contribute to kind of the work that we do. So our next step is to flesh this out in a little bit more detail, do some homework and kind of landscape of what are the kind of national organizations that might be organs for communication or sharing that we can start to connect with. And then we have to decide, well, what does that look like? Do we go to them? Do they come to us? Is there a separate convening? Is there a way of expanding membership here around interest, things like that? But I think we all three, I'll let Angela and James contribute anything that I left out, but I know for one that I left, I mean, really excited about this as something that I think as we tapped on to something I think that we really need to act on.
Plus one.
well said, Richard. Yeah. I mean, I just would say, yeah, I think we would all probably say, oh, yeah, we're doing social justice work broadly. And I realize when I think about my pitches, I'm always talking about hunger and homelessness and connecting to these groups and those groups, but I really don't talk to those groups, or other national groups who are doing that kind of advocacy or doing that kind of work on campus, and they probably haven't connected with people doing open as well. So how can we inform ourselves as well as helping to inform them?
No, the thing I would add is like it's sort of humbling to think about like, I'm not sure who to go to talk about these things or how to make these connections. So, yeah, we do have some homework ahead of us in order to figure out the points of communication.
But it's all about building a broader coalition.
Yep. Exactly.
And that's so important.
Exactly. Yeah. So let us know if you have ideas about which organizations we would want to reach out to form this coalition. That would be awesome.
Just a question. You said national groups. This is a broader question. Are we having an international conversation here or a U.S. national conversation?
Willem speaks for the rest of the world here. what does the rest of the world say?
It's a serious question, though, because the answer to that question would lead us down very different paths in our work.
We should take some more time and think through that. I think where the ideas surface, like we were talking about the work that they do.
We're community college focused.
Find out from there.
You're absolutely right. It is a serious question. It's a larger question. I think for our purposes of thinking that couldn't go bigger other than the parameters of this group overall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So going international might be part of the higher aspiration, longer term agenda. But I think just from a number of practical perspectives, you know, we have the fairly U.S.-centric with a little bit, you know, outside cohort for this, you know, first round of meetings.
Can I just I actually think it's not like I understand it's a sort of a complex and large conversation, but I don't think that they're necessarily in conflict, right? Because essentially what you're saying, which I love, is that we're taking OER out of this niche category and actually just saying, who are students in post-secondary education and what are their needs?
Exactly.
How is open education a tool for addressing them, right? And so I can imagine a scenario where that is the same question that our counterparts in other parts of the world would also ask, right? So in the Netherlands, they could have different set of needs for their students, right? Ours are particular to our context. But you could apply the same principles to address them as well.
And you probably anticipated it, but one of the things that's been on the sort of to-do list that nobody's ever gotten to is I think of the model of like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s. And you know, what really put civil rights on the map was the religious communities. Mm-hmm. And we have had no, you know, most of us come from these intellectual, academic environments, and we're not in the churches. And gee, if we could figure out how to get the church into us and get us into the churches and the temples and the synagogues and the mosques, we could really build a broader coalition.
Wonderful.
Excellent point.
Let me enter whatever notes you guys have into the record. I don't know, through Annika or through sharing some other way, but it would be really important, like, obviously, we're trying to capture all that you said, and you have some record of it, but for all of our groups.
We're going to add it to the Equity, Access, Inclusion page.
Anything else? Thank you. Second on the list is Value Propositions Incentives. MJ, Loan, Cable, and myself. The notes, so I'll talk them down, but jump in and keep me honest. I'd say, our conversation focused, I think, on two aspects. The first being the need for much better, direct, tangible incentives and infrastructure support for faculty to participate, to create, to use OER. And the second part of it being a big, well-tuned messaging campaign around that open is not just free, you know, free cost textbooks, but has this much broader suite of really important aspects, for instance, that will get us towards more support for access. Those are the two sort of main topics that we went through. On the first one about faculty incentives, examples, for instance, of faculty tenure promotion cases, finding ways to start to move the needle on faculty participation in OER being supported. There might be financial incentives involved. I know there's the case of Open Textbook Library, which pays a small stipend, as I understand, for reviewing textbooks that faculty, you know, faculty. Precious and needs to be recognized as such. What it takes to shift the cultures around incentives and infrastructure within the academy takes a tremendous amount of persistence. But we should be looking for initial footholds, ways to get in, with say pilot programs or things that we can get some more experience and try to scale up. Anything you want to add on that?
Around the idea of a maturity index, trying to find things is deliverables that could help with this sort of incremental process of folks becoming better in tune with what OER is about. We kind of acknowledge that it is sort of a stepwise story that we tell people, you know, that we often kind of lead with free part, but then begin to demonstrate other value along the way, and it's going to depend on the audience, the folks that we're working with. We're still sort of swirling around some of this stuff. And I love that you guys wrote the value proposition. That was tremendous.
On the second point, just expanding on the, you know, the broader suite of value propositions, we did something of an inventory of the different sorts of value proposition statements that have already been created, and how well those worked, where they may have fallen short. This concept of possibly investing in training and supporting, you know, a large number of really effective ambassadors at each school who can go in and have the conversations with the key people on a one-on-one basis, because you got to meet them. You got to meet people where they are, their understanding, their misperceptions, perhaps, about what OER is all about. And rather than hit them, we'll produce, a coherent, nice, white paper version of this too, but really the key thing is to be able to go in and meet people where they are and understand what they value and tune the message to each of those conversations. The sense that it's really through that just daily work, persistent, that the kind of change that we want to see, people's understanding of the broader set of value propositions for OER.
We talked about the importance of tuning the message to different audiences and to show them, as you said, what the ladder of participation looks like from novice to expert in any of those spaces. And then we talked about different communication strategies with different audiences, and one of the things we talked about was to capture the attention of a particular audience, to start by explaining with data what the status quo looks like today. And so the example I was sharing was in K-12, oftentimes we start by saying, let's look at your curriculum, let's look at how much money you spend today, and then let's look at the results you're getting from that. And so on average, your curriculum's 12 years old. Your students don't get to keep the resources when they leave the grade. You have no open license on the content, so even if your teachers want to update the 12-year-old content, they don't have the legal rights to do so. And even if they want to try to break the law, it's only in print, and so they don't even have the digital files. And if you are engaged in an inclusive access deal, the digital files are locked down with digital rights management, and you can't get in and adjust the stuff anyway. And so to, in a friendly, diplomatic way, lay out sort of how rotten the current status quo situation is, and that there's significant investments in it already, and that with a change to open, we show them what that journey looks like, all the steps it's going to take, how much better their situation could be. And that's different for different audiences.
One other thing, we didn't talk about this explicitly, but my sense is we have a pretty good list of value propositions. There's not a lot of new stuff that needs to be added. It's all in the messaging and how we work to convince people of the power of those propositions. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Because there's just an awful lot of people that think OER is just about the free part. How open would you?
Yeah, that's right. Nod to Sparks, how open is it? Chart.
We're working on that.
Yeah, I'm curious. Did you do anything you were talking about? The places where that message has gotten through effectively are places where, MJ's gone to talk, Nicole's gone to talk, Cable or Richard or James or, is there something that we could do that reaches more people more efficiently? And I just, I think about that myself. I haven't got a clue what it is, but I wish somebody would make a popular movie where one of the characters was a champion of OER, or it was some way to infect the popular culture.
I just promised Monica I was going to archive my talk that she's heard 45 times. Jokes over and over again.
Right. I think a big part of the answer to that is the all of the great leadership training programs which have come out in the last couple of years. So Spark's got a great leadership training program. Creative Commons has the CC certificates. Mm-hmm. The Open Textbook Network has a library and certificate. And these are investments in people. They're investments in leaders. I was reporting to our board yesterday that people that have graduated from the CC certificate, they are asked at least weekly for advice about open licensing, public domain, copyright, by 71% of the time, they're asked weekly to help their colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relatively small investment. I mean, the certificate costs $500. It's 10 weeks. People are graduating, and they're leaders in their institutions and their communities.
I don't know that it has to be that complicated, though. You know, a whole leadership certificate program. Last week was up in Western Maryland, where we're getting a coalition of institutions up there to start collaborating around OER adoptions and Gen Ed and other areas. And there was a woman at the table, I don't know if you could hear this from the phone, but there was a woman at the table that when it came to her to talk, I had already given my spiel about how it's not just about free, it's about student success. We've done access and affordability, what about achievement? Here are the ways we could start tackling that. Maybe 10 minutes at most. Her eyes, oh, I mean, literally, I'm seeing the aha through her eyes. You know, I agree with Hal, you know, there may be some real simple things that we could do to just shift this conversation. Don't misunderstand me, I think all those other things are great too, but leadership certificate, you know, we just need to get people to start thinking differently about what this is all about.
We need a top 10 song.
Yeah, right.
We need a rap. We need
something that's part of the mainstream of popular culture. Kanye did a tweet about.
Right.
And he probably reached more people than all of us together.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Like on paywall for OER maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's been an impactful documentary. It's transcended higher ed.
Yeah.
It's elevated that conversation in a different.
It's probably as close to what I'm thinking about.
And it's actually something I think we are capable of.
What?
The documentary on paywall.
Okay.
Back then, I think he was at Clarkson University. I can't remember.
Yeah,
Jason Schmidt. Yeah, documentary about, you know, paywall and Elsevier and, you know, scientific publishing.
Oh, my gosh. Does anyone know Hasan Minhaj?
Yeah.
I feel like he could do one. And it would be super great on, like, the publishing monopoly. Nicole, get on that. Yes.
Those are the kind of really deep dives that would really get into the popular culture that where we could reach 10 million people overnight, you know? Because, like I said, if you walk out here and approached 100 people on the street and asked them, what's OER, you know, you'd be lucky to find one.
Okay, so maybe this is what it is, right? So the top 10 song sheet is not work products that we do, but maybe it's just like a song sheet that we all have that has like the lyrics written out so that when we all talk about the value proposition, right? Because you make the point that it's out there, and I feel like it sort of is, but I think maybe it's not, right? Because there is a default to thinking about it as just saving money on a book, right? And I think that there was tremendous value in awareness in that campaign, but is there something else that we could do? And so don't laugh, right, but, you know, this is something that several people have brought up. So what if, like, a white paper or a word product of this larger group or the larger OER community is something like the Sustainable Development Goals? Like, we have very lofty goals, like the one that you articulated from your group, and say, like, these are just things that we want to do, and just throw them out into the universe, because, you know, the UN doesn't individually fund projects in that way. They didn't say, like, well, we have this goal where that people won't be hungry anymore, and here are, like, 10 grants. They just said, we don't think people should be hungry anymore, and people shouldn't have, like, you know, weird childhood diseases from malnutrition. I mean, it's sort of like, what if we just put out, like, some, like, top, and it's, like, it should not be 10, that's just way too many, but, like, things like what you were saying, and Mark, you said something in our group, too, about just opportunity for students, like just a way out where they are. What if we just had a few of those and sort of our work product was just elaborating on what that looks like? What is the state of the world? What is the state of the U.S.? Here are some tools, including open license materials and this OER community that is really committed to these things. Join us or do your own thing. It's fine. We don't care. We have no money.
The UN website, which has like the Sustainable Development Goals, I think 17, like they're beautifully color coded, and they have logos for each of them.
Yeah.
When Greta came to New York, there were 17 boats that sailed out in the harbor to greet her from the UN. It was really like that, one for each goal.
Yeah.
I don't know that we can afford boats, although we're in Maryland. But if we could do like the Sustainable Education Goals. Like if we called it that and riffed off their thing and then color-coded them and stuff, it relates to, I think, some of what Cable was saying too, like in terms of manifestos and declarations and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. What if we, damn it.
I think it's awesome.
Like something more, like I think about some of the things that you say, Cable, like some kind of thought experiments, like what if, what if the textbook across the country, we reduce textbook costs to zero, like what could you get out of that? Like some kind of interesting kind of data reports where you can imagine something, a structural barrier that doesn't necessarily need to be in there. Like why do community colleges, I would ask this question, compete with each other, right? Like these things that happen that end up impacting students negatively, like what if that weren't there? What if we imagine a world where this wasn't there, something enabled by open and kind of, creatively kind of express through data, like what the benefits might be as a kind of a campaign of like thinking differently about education broadly. And
another rhetorical tool to do that, Time Magazine just published the year is 2050, the topic is climate change, and in 2050, we're looking back at the decisions that were made in 2019 that allowed the Earth to live, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these essays from people writing about, oh, well, finally, investigative journalists got a hold of all the reports from the petrochemical companies and found out that they were suppressing green technologies for 2 decades. When that was published, the public freaked out, and U.S. government subsidies went away for petrochemical companies. That led to this, which led to this, right? So it's a really interesting, like I was reading it going, this is all possible. Like we can, and it was, I got enthusiastic about it because it was written, it was written about the past with some very logical solutions. And then you walk away from reading those articles saying, why are we not doing that now? And what can I do to help?
Prospective history.
Yeah, we could do something like that.
Well, all of these so far, I'm sorry. It strikes me that all of the suggestions so far are really about getting outside of ourselves, right? Getting outside of this room, getting outside of the community, right? Go bigger, but also go broader. Don't keep the good news to ourselves.
One of the challenges, just echo Cable what you were saying, like, Tom Smith, who's not here, he's on vacation, he hosted our group with us at MIT the first time, and will be there the last one in May. That's when we do it. We were riffing on what an open 2040 working group might do, looking back exactly on the open 2020 group. And like, in the same way that we're kind of in the opening paragraph of our thing, we were talking about looking back 18 years at the launch of OCW and those great purple swanny, as you put it, moments. What would those moments be in 2040? Just to echo exactly what Cable and Time Magazine have said. But we were saying something like that too. What would that look like? So that's kind of, interestingly enough, our remit, it really is.
That's a fun idea.
That's great. In the interest of time, we'll move on to the next team.
Thank you.
Infrastructure and tools and sustainability.
All right. I'll be the spokesperson. They will add color, more depth. Depth, not my strength. So I'm going to run through five bullet points. The first one we thought about was considering extending the environmental scan based on our colleagues up at Simon Fraser, if we could actually do one to identify the existing OER infrastructure and tools that are out there. Now, something like that might exist. We didn't know where that might be. So just having a good understanding of where those tools are so that we have something to point to. Document and understand and research what faculty preparation slash workflow looks like for using OER in the classroom. Define what that faculty experience is. Develop more standardized infrastructure for capturing classroom outcomes when OER or other materials are used, even publisher, and enlisting these commercial publishers to share assessment data with us. But just run to us to share that data. You know?
That's all it was.
We just wanted to hear the question. Develop policies for sharing data around assessments that can be compared with alternatives. So I don't know about the rest of your institutions or countries or states. Sharing data within SUNY is like trying to get all the divorced couples to join for a Thanksgiving dinner. It's just not going to happen. So, you know. And then develop a set of open tools, adaptive platforms, algorithms, open data sources, AI, that we can actually start plugging into existing open content. Anything else that I'm missing? Brianna took 3 pages of notes. That's hardcore.
We shared the notes.
Yeah, but that was hardcore. Good work.
I love the ambition.
She's an author. So maybe, you know, I mean, just I think that's point three in your list.
Yeah, I think it could have
a hook, right? We're at a moment when some universities and some countries even are beginning to push back against the publisher big deals. They're beginning to contemplate or, and in some cases, carry out these fairly radical breaks with the existing model. And you could imagine a similar kind of politicization of issues around access to student outcome data. The price of the Pearson contract was sharing student outcome data at a fairly high level, at a level that satisfied the university, so that you began to level the playing field with OER, adaptive interactive learning platforms or learning tools. You could imagine that taking on the same kind of political valence in the universities, analogous to the way that the big deals are now being challenged.
And one of the hypotheses we had also was, you know, we understood actually how faculty prepared to teach their courses with OER. We actually may have a better understanding of how that improves the overall course itself. I mean, there's plenty of educational research that shows that when faculty take time to redesign their courses and really focus on their courses, it improves the learning experience for students. You know, we can apply that type of methodology to OER research, and we actually may have a theoretical framework and actually start producing quality OER scholarship.
Linda Darling-Hammond has done some fabulous work.
It's worth noting as we think about what the next generation of OER looks like and we start thinking about these adaptive coursewares, that we actually know a lot less about how these can be effectively integrated into instructional practice. And the kind of transparency that OPEN brings to the table, both in the types of materials and its call for open data and the kinds of practices that we have, is really one of the best ways for us to investigate what works well, for what kinds of learners does it work well? And by inviting that broader population to the table, this is one of the ways that we can start to make an argument that, with apologies, I'm not interested in listing grievances. I'm interested in going out and telling everyone why an open educational approach is better, because I believe it is better. This is one of the ways that we gather that evidence.
Yeah.
So did you do your homework assignment? No. Part of our homework assignment was to read that document that MIT published.
We've gotten a grant from the Nellie Foundation to basically expand intelligence at Simon Fraser to basically do a survey of existing open publishing platforms. And there's a little coverage in the OER space, but it's not really comprehensive.
really well done.
Yeah, it is really well done. We
wanted it to be completely impartial and not, you know, be about the stuff that we're developing, and I think that that was a good model. I think the other way that I would go beyond what we did there was including other models of cross-institutional consortia that have been effective. Like one of the things we talked about in our session was the Audi Data Exchange. The American Association of Universities has, it's a fairly limited subset of universities, but agreeing essentially to support and share data, with all kinds of privacy constraints around it, but to kind of enrich the institutions' understanding of their own populations and what works. And it's a fairly limited data set, as you can imagine growing that consortia and enriching it with, like, mm-hmm. But I also see that as kind of infrastructure, the organization.
To get a good understanding of that document that Simon Frazier produced, really, I highly recommend it. There's a great post within the Scholarly Kitchen, I think about a year or two ago, that Roger Schoenfeld wrote, did kind of a summary of that report. Really well done, dude.
Could you circulate that?
Yeah.
Well, the report just came out.
Okay.
He didn't do the homework out there, did he?
No, he was just making it up. Right. They clipped down. Yeah.
Any other discussion?
No.
Great. Last but not least, trust the truth.
Do
you
want to?
I didn't take that, so I will cheerlead what you
have to say.
Hal?
No,
Peter,
this is.
I'm.
It's all you.
Oh,
okay, buddy.
You can do it here. All right, here we go. I want to wrap now because there was that talk of a wrap to Liverpool, but I don't have it. I guess our discussion opened with Hal declaring that he just recently read the Declaration of Independence, which is weird because that's what I was doing before this meeting too. And we were wondering whether there could be a pledge for a new set of behaviors that could be articulated. I guess that was a thought experiment out there, but some kind of statement that people could be inspired by. We also talked about a symposium or a gathering to discuss what universities and other knowledge institutions could call or consider to be their responsibility now in this age of post-truth. And one of the ideas that came up in our thing was universities or museums, when they hear something false on Fox News, for one example, just to pick an example, if they somehow publish something that corrects it, it's like a swear jar. They get a infusion of something from a foundation or a fund, like the university library gets some reward for doing that kind of thing. Tell me if I'm missing anything, Deb, so far. Economic incentive.
The opposite thing happen? You have something taken away from you?
We could
lie.
We're in charge, you know. Economic incentive to correct bad facts. That's a facet. We talked about experiments with Wikipedia, where university faculty and students could really be somehow incentivized. Maybe in the same way that the first faculty were incentivized around OpenCourseWare with small gifts or grants to contribute more to the commons, and especially on areas where, you know, there's some public controversy or there's some big issues at the core of our national or international debates. And that has the added advantage of sort of rendering some of the language around climate science or school busing or other things, some of the language that exists in the publications of university faculty or museum bulletins or other, somewhat more accessible. So not only the platform, which also is rising to the top of search every time, if it's with Wikipedia, but some of the language and contributions. And it would perhaps, we talked about riffing off that, the concept which Hal came up with of a public knowledge requirement for universities or knowledge institutions to somehow feel that they're required to contribute to the commons in some fashion or another, or to public knowledge, however we define that. And that's a pretty exciting thing. It's even more exciting because we render that as an acronym, and we call it the PKR. And I don't know whether any of the other groups came up with an acronym, but we have an acronym, and our acronym is PKR. So that's
That was Peter's
intention. Yeah, but it was your turn, so it was your idea. So
I feel like it just because it starts with PK.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. But that would be... that would be cool, and at all different levels, it's a, I don't know, it's a measurement of something.
Peter, can I share with this?
Yeah, sure.
So I think this came about in a discussion of Hal talking about the two streams of information, the misinformation stream and the academic information stream. And that one was a whole lot more accessible to the regular public than the other. And that the Wikipedia idea, in a sense, is a sort of infiltration of making much more accessible, and both in terms of in a forum that's already a go-to place and connected back to what are acknowledging this idea of authoritative sources, it would be a way to sort of do both of those things, because unless we have it, I think this group was talking about having a, if we're seeing some influencers out there who are on social media and Twitter and can influence, we could do that, but otherwise we've got to have a little bit more staid approach to doing that. And Peter was talking about when you search something, Wikipedia results are one of the first things that come up, right? And so maybe we should think about infiltrating that with more of the, what we know, what we actually know from and the PKR, public knowledge requirement, could be a way to do that, right? Is to get individualized action for faculty to participate in that in a way that's not too heavy a load. If they're already, I think Peter's idea was they're developing their classes. If they're four or five topics, I think I expanded the number, but of the, in Wikipedia that's relevant to the discipline and what they're teaching, why not? Why not as part of what you're doing for your course development is to be able to contribute to a public knowledge base at the same time that you're doing it. It's not a heavy lift for faculty. Compared to some of the other things.
It's also possible to visualize that if Fox News is really the network that belongs to the other side in this, I don't know if it's fair to say that in this group, and we don't want to probably create some binomial situation where, binary thing where us against them, but the progressive network could be said to be Wikipedia, could be the Internet Archive. Could be our network. I think it's too late to establish, the OER news, it's an OER channel. I don't know. If there were an OER channel, maybe it would be across Wikipedia, the Internet Archive, other places on the common. I think it's a cool idea to imagine that. Tonight. Yeah,
I like your theme song.
That's good.
Can I ask a question? So I think this goes back to maybe something you said too. And obviously I contribute because I love have that knowledge. But MIT and a lot of your institutions are also big influencers as well. And I wonder if there's a way for you all to just take back the role, right? So this is double, right? So this is getting the national attention, right? And then also being sort of the bastion of, like, public knowledge, right, that like, these institutions traditionally have played and should continue to, right? So, like, what would it take for one of the institutions around this table to make a public statement about that and to actually create a system that they could not only incentivize their faculty members to participate in, but to open it up, right, for others? So similar to how OCW was way in the early days, right? Like, you were just doing an MIT thing. And other people could jump on this OER bandwagon later if they wanted to, but you were making a statement as the influencer in the area. And so I guess I'm just wondering, is there an opportunity for you to do that now?
I swear to you that, like, I ask that question every day because of the power of the institution.
Yeah.
Is totally incommensurate with